Good evening. This is Fireside Chat with the Zany Mystic. We have a really wonderful guest tonight, and this is really exciting, people, because all of this has kind of come together at once, and I think a lot of us are experiencing this synchronicity, and so I'm real excited about getting her on the show, and many things come across my desk, and this kind of goes along with the show tonight. And it comes from Canada, and it says, it's an email I got, and it said, a friend of mine from Canada watched two TV programs last night about how the Canadian news media is getting out the truth to the public about 911 and more. On a large conference call tonight, she played the tapes of both so that all could hear and be up with what's going on in our government, as our media does not tell us the truth. I don't think that's any surprise to people out there, and no doubt this is somewhat preaching to the choir, but it's important that we keep informed about what's really going on out there, and just remember that, you know, it's about shining our love and our light, and, you know, and our truth. So I'd like to introduce my guest. Tonight, it's Janet C. Phelan, and she's a former investigative reporter. And without further ado, here we go. Janet, are you there?
Yes, I am. And okay. Thank you very much.
I think you'll have to speak up just a bit.
Okay. How is this?
That's a little better.
Okay. Yes, it was kind of interesting how this happened because I ran into Zany Mystic on a Yahoo group. And I was kind of taken with his.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
Oh dear! I will speak up.
Yes.
Okay. I'm on the phone. I'm here in Los Angeles on the phone.
Okay.
And I had run across you on a Yahoo group, and I was sort of drawn to the things you were posting. I'm have to state kind of initially that. I have been a reporter over 25 years, and I'm pretty, you know, grounded in reality as it is, you know, on this planet. I'm not particularly involved in out-of-body experiences or extraterrestrial stuff really at all. Somehow I kind of ended up being on a group that I didn't actually even subscribe to. But I was just kind of watching this stuff going on, and I was kind of interested in your take on things, and I sent you an email, and right around that time you had started this just been invited to do this radio show, and somehow we started talking, and you invited me on as your first guest, and I thought that was really, you know, pretty wonderful. Most people who know of me because of my work on the Patriot Act and the water system.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, which is a very kind of nuts and bolts and pipes and valves kind of topic.
Uh-huh.
But there are some other things that I have been, you know, wanting to discuss that I think are very relevant to other people's experiences on this plane. And this was, you know, kind of the what I was afforded to. By your offer, you know, to have me on the show.
Yeah, it's really kind of it seems coincidental how, you know, I was asked to do if I wanted to do a radio show every week. And then all of a sudden I got an email, and it was basically a very nice, gentle, intelligent request for help. And, you know, I had no idea if I could direct you in the right direction or what it is that you were going to ask for help about, and once we started talking on the telephone, I realized that, you know, this was a lot more important and a lot more germane to our lives than I had thought. And in fact, you know, the more we talked, I wish we could have taped our conversations because they were so wonderful. You know, we've had some really wonderful spiritual conversations, and I think part of what intrigues me about your experience is that you're still alive, I'm still alive. And, you know, it's a testimony to the human spirit. So where do you want to begin with your story? I definitely want to hear about about your spiritual awakening, and I'm sure that will come into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as I said, I'm actually going to be 54 years old this month. I've been a reporter.
And I need you to speak up just a
bit. I am going to be 54 years old this month. I've been a reporter since I was in my 20s.
Okay.
I did my undergraduate at Grinnell College, UC Berkeley. My graduate work was done at the University of Missouri, Graduate School of Journalism. I've written for the Los Angeles Times, Long Beach Press Telegram, Santa Monica Daily Press, other papers. I also have published quite a bit of poetry in the last 25 or so years. And back in 2000, right around the time of the first Bush, the Bush coup, that falsified election.
Right.
Actually, it was right before that. I got a phone call, and the phone call was in response to an ad I had placed in the LA Weekly. I was, at that point, about 48 years old. I'd been divorced a long time, and I put an ad in the LA Weekly.
You're fading in and out of on my side, so you must be fading in and out on the radio side, too.
Not good.
Just make sure you're speaking into the, you know.
Yes, I am. I have my mouth right up to
the Okay, it must be the connection. Fancy that.
Okay, well, I will do the best I can with this, and if it fades out completely, let me know, and I'll shut up.
All right.
Okay, well, back in 2000, I had placed this relationship ad in the LA Weekly, and I got a phone call from someone named Jack L. Smith, who just amazingly fit the bill for, you know, for the perfect man I was looking for in just about everything possible. Like me, he was half Catholic, half Jewish. Like me, you know, he loved the theater. Like me, I mean, it was almost like a mirror.
Yeah, go on.
And it turned out that nothing. Very, very little that Jack L. Smith had put out as to who he was actually true. Jack L. Smith is actually Special Agent Jack L. Smith.
Okay.
And he does undercover work. He is what is known as a tightrope walker. What a tightrope walker is in terms of federal agents is somebody who is such an accomplished liar that you can send him into some very delicate and kind of interpersonal situations to finesse.
Okay.
Because he is essentially an agency Mata Hari.
Okay.
Now, to give a little background here, my father, Jim Phelan, was an investigative reporter and best-selling author. My father passed away in 97 of lung cancer. And my father had made an awful lot of enemies in his life. He had written about J. Edgar Hoover's FBI. He had done some things in terms of the Kennedy assassination that got everybody upset at him. He was on Richard Nixon's enemies list. My father's article on the Nixon-Hughes loan was credited by the man who won the election for the California gubernatorial seat, which was Pat Brown. Pat Brown was losing the election for Richard Nixon. So my father was, you know, kind of out there and pissing people off pretty regularly. Well, my father had passed away, and up shows Jack L. Smith to accomplish a mission. And that mission, apparently, was the destruction of my father's family.
Okay.
Jack, you know, the perfect guy. I mean, how could I not fall in love with him? He couldn't have been more attentive. He couldn't have been, you know, more perfect. Everything I liked, he liked, you know, and, you know, very bright, very personable, and a relationship developed. And suddenly, I was told I had to leave my apartment, and I wasn't given any real reason why. And the landlord got very insistent. I had to move. And I had this incipient relationship, and for some reason, I couldn't find another apartment. It was the weirdest thing. I mean, it was getting desperate, and she was leaning on. So anyway, I moved in with Jack L. Smith in West Hollywood. His residence is at 7911 Norton Avenue in West Hollywood. It's just a very nice old condo building, insisting the 911 address. Well, some things are synchronicity, and some things are planned. So you know, I moved into a two-bedroom condo, and some weird stuff started happening right away in terms of my mother.
Okay.
Some bad things started happening right away to my mother.
Okay.
And my mother was up in her 80s. Dr. Emily Phelan, my mother, had been a clinical psychologist. She had a PhD from Syracuse University. My mother was Jewish. And she was, you know, up in her 80s and kind of vulnerable. She was living with my sister, or rather my sister was living with her. My sister's name is Judith Phelan. She's now residing in Oakland. And it appears that a deal had been cut between my sister and the federal government that had to do with the destruction of the rest of the family, my mother and myself.
Okay.
And a situation got engineered. There began to be some legal concern about my mother's well-being. My mother went under a conservatorship with some people that Jack Smith had set up for my mother to be taken care of by. These people are some very nefarious people who are in Riverside County. There's an attorney named J. David Horsepool who does a business out of, in Redlands, and he has a client named Melody Scott. And actually, Melody Scott was, a few months ago, splashed over the front page of the L.A. Times on Sunday, basically exposing her as a fiduciary thief. And this was the person that, that we were guided to. There had been some problems with the finances and the estate. Some money appeared to be disappearing. It turned out my sister was forging endorsements on checks.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, about at least $50,000. That's how that eventuated, but I didn't know that at the time. So, you know, we felt that in order to protect the funds, well, you know, we got set up with these people.
Okay.
And immediately, as soon as my mother signed a conservatorship statement, some very bad things started happening to her. And the statement was signed in December of 2001.
Okay.
And immediately my mother became endangered. And in June of 2002, I got a call from my mother. She was living in Riverside County. I was at that point in L.A. Living with Jack. I got a call from her, and she was apparently near death. And I sped to Temecula. I, you know, came to see my mother, who at that time was so sick she could barely walk. I took her to the hospital. She was turned over to surgery. She had heart surgery that day. She had a pacemaker put in. I came back to the house, and there was evidence at the house that of at least criminal negligence, if not something worse. My mother had been a cardiac patient. Her pill bottles were there. The people who were taking care of my mother, including, unfortunately, my sister, had neglected to give my mother her heart medicine for several months. And this is somebody who had had a couple double bypasses. You know, she needed her heart medicine. So anyway, at that point, things started getting even stranger because I called the police. I made a police report. When I got a copy of the police report, they lied on the police report in terms of counting the pills, and suddenly I had a restraining order against me, placed by Melody Scott and David Horsepool. So I went to court on the restraining order, I took Jack Smith, and there wasn't any hearing.
Oh.
Now, I have the documents, I have Jack Smith's own letter, I have the court's own records, you know, there's a hearing, I was restrained because I was so dangerous to my mother by saving her life, whatever, and there's no hearing. Now, that is patently unconstitutional.
Yes.
That is a denial of due process. That doesn't happen in this country. Well, I have, you know, have the documents, and I was in court. I sat in court all day. No hearing. And it got worse. I arrested Jack Smith in September of 2002 because he became violent, and I made a police report once again. You know, a lying police report. There was no mention. I was told by the reporting officers I'd reported a felony. There's no report of a felony. You know, nothing happens to him, blah, blah, blah. He goes to jail for a second, and then, you know, nothing happens because there's nothing in the police report that would mandate anything to happen. And so I left him, and I moved back to Long Beach on my own and began to experience attempts on my life. Now, this is a very strange story. Why would protecting your mother and taking her to the hospital and trying to, you know, make sure that things are okay for your elderly mother incur this level of attention? Now, apparently, there was some insistence and necessity on the part of the perception of some people to make us dead. My mother is dead, by the way, and I don't know how she died.
Okay.
At that point, after being removed from the home, she was not allowed to return home. She was basically legally kidnapped, and my mother is dead.
You know, it's so hard for all of us to comprehend that these things could possibly go on in our country. You know, we hear about them in other countries, and we understand that dictators do some pretty nasty, nefarious things. But, you know, as far as this country goes, all we hear is the tip of the iceberg, if that. And it seems like so many people are coming forward about various events that are, you know, misleading or that we have been misled about. And there's quite a big movement going on. And, you know, I know in regards to the 911 incident, and I don't want to dally on that too long, but there's, you know, many Truth Out organizations that are, you know, chock full of intelligent, caring people that, you know, are concerned about our country that are trying to basically just find out what the truth is. And unfortunately for, you know, in your situation with your mom at any rate, you may never know.
I may never know how my mother died.
But, you know,
but I do understand at this point a lot more than I did at the time about the impetus behind all this.
These things all the time now. I mean, because I do writing on the internet and I try to stay connected to various sources, I get things all the time that, you know, from people saying that, you know, that basically what you're saying. And it's so hard for people to comprehend that these kinds of nefarious activities are going on. But they are. And, you know, it's not about creating fear in our lives because, you know, that's, you know, it's part and parcel of living. And, you know, we need to learn how to transcend our fear. So, you know, the point of this, by bringing this information to light is to not scare everybody, but to just help people to awaken to things that are going on some levels. And we're multidimensional beings of light and love, and fear is just false evidence appearing real. So it's important to know what is the false evidence, you know, and what is reality? What is the truth? And that's something only each one of us can know. I want to find out more, you know, about your spiritual awakening, the car accident, and about how you got into the T-valves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you're going to have to speak up even more because our connection is really bad.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well,
that's better.
Okay. Some things began to happen on many different levels when after Jack Smith made the outreach to me. I had been a very secular person. I mean, I didn't go to church or synagogue or really think much about those matters. I was an agnostic. I had suspended belief and suspended disbelief.
Okay.
And I started to have dreams. I started to have dreams about things that actually ended up happening later.
Okay.
I remember at one point I had a dream that I remember the dream very well. A lot of people showed up and tried to kill my mother. And I showed up, and then they tried to blame my mother's murder on me. And then suddenly, in the dream, I was homeless. Now, and there was some concern. I remember in the dream I had some concern that my identity had been broadcast elsewhere and that I had to, like, change my appearance. Now, that's a weird dream for somebody who's been pretty middle class and living, you know, in a more or less nice neighborhood in Long Beach all her life.
And
you know,
pretty
to suddenly
much
have this,
things as they were, right?
But,
I mean,
and
you,
in the dream, Jack Smith was involved in the murder. Now, at that point, you know, I had nothing but, you know, some positive feelings towards Jack Smith. So that was a very strange dream. And the dream thing began to, you know, kind of snowball in terms of having dreams that could have been conceived as warnings.
Right.
And So, you know, in a sense, and then my situation got very serious because on January 3rd of 2003, I had just moved. I had been in a house in Long Beach, and I'd moved to another apartment. I was very, by the way, very happy to have moved because the place I'd been in, there was obviously sneaks and peeks going on. There was, like, a lot of problems. I felt it didn't feel real safe there.
Okay.
So I moved to a new place on December 31st, and on January 3rd, I was rendered unconscious in the murder attempt by a Long Beach police officer. Several officers were at the scene. Several apparently were federal. The one I can identify was Lauren Dawson, Long Beach Police Department.
Okay.
Now, that's a very serious situation. I was unconscious
when you were actually beaten by
I was not beaten. I was a suicide by cop. I was corralled by Dawson. I was taken to a location, an undisclosed location, and I was injected in my right arm. I collapsed like a sack of potatoes, and
wow.
I was unconscious for 2 days.
Wow.
When I woke up in a hospital on a heart monitor.
Wow.
Now, that happened to me. There are other people who have not been so lucky. Gary Webb died of a drug overdose right around the time he was getting involved with the Michael Reconosciuto matter, which apparently a lot of people end up apparently committing suicide who get involved with Michael Reconosciuto, the next federal officer who's now in prison on setup charges, apparently.
Mm.
Another one is, I believe, Jim Hatfield wrote a book about Bush called The Fortunate Son, and then received some threats to his family's well-being and suddenly committed suicide. Drug overdose, I believe it was. This is a rather common way of faking a suicide.
Yeah.
The only thing that I think is really different between me and the others is I'm here living and breathing and saying it happened to me.
Yeah.
Now, you know, what is it about protecting your mother? What is it about the necessity to make my mother dead? What is it about protecting her life that was seen as such a threat? And this is something, you know, that needs some explication. A lot of people are discussing Bush as if he's Hitler. You know,
right.
this metaphor is becoming rather pronounced in alternative media circles. You know, George Bush is acting like Adolf Hitler. He's invading all these countries. He's blah, blah, blah. Well, but is he killing his own Jewish populace? I'm saying yes. I'm saying that the hit on my family was a hit on a Jewish family, and that what is coming down the pipes in this country, and literally down the pipes in terms of the article that I have been working on and promoting over my other broadcasts that I have done. I've done about 30 in the last year, is about a particular weapon using the water system as a weapon, which has essentially been authorized in the Patriot Act and will be targeting the groups that are slated for extermination, among them the Jews.
Wow.
Now, for some reason, back in 2002, 2003.
A little bit louder.
Yes, back in 2002 and 2003, like I said, you know, I'm a reporter. I had not been a particularly prominent reporter, not like my father at
right.
all. I've been really small potatoes. I was successful. I was good at what I did, but I didn't do much of any particular interest. And I had a series of illnesses. I had not been working at the time that Jack Smith showed up. I apparently was not considered to be much of a threat.
Okay.
And something altered during the course of my association with Smith. There was a lot of time to get hands-on information about me, you know, what kind of person I was. Was I, you know, somebody who could be corrupted? There was an attempt at one point to bribe me by Melody Scott. A lot of things going on, and I think the perception was that this woman isn't going to quit. I knew that I was risking my life in terms of my mother. That became very apparent. I didn't understand, you know, who it was that was, you know, breaking into my home and doing all these horrible things, but I knew that my life was in danger.
Yeah.
And I felt very strongly that was not as important as saving my mother's life.
Right.
The fact that I endangered myself. And I think that when a person gets involved in federal, you know, federal arena. I mean, I particularly call it walking into the room. The room is the federal room where all the really bad stuff is going on.
Okay.
And most people don't know about it. You know, they're not aware. But if you end up in the room by happenstance or fate, then, you know, they have to figure, can we get rid of them? Can we get them out of the room? Can we shut them up? Well, my sister could be shut up.
Yeah.
My sister's happily living up in Oakland. I don't know what she tells people about her family. I never talked to my sister. My sister was corruptible, and I was not. So I got out of the hospital I think it was January 5th or 6th, after being rendered unconscious. I went back to my apartment to find out that I didn't have an apartment anymore. My home had simply been absconded with. Very shortly afterwards, my bank account was frozen.
Wow.
I had no bank account. I've had, you know, a very difficult time getting any money of my inheritance, which, you know, was essentially left in trust to me and my sister. My sister doesn't have any problem getting it. I have to fight, you know, tooth and nail to get a penny out of the trust. So, you know, basically I ended up in a very endangered situation. And being homeless, and I am now homeless and have been for 3 years, is simply the most dangerous lifestyle possible. You sleep outside, you can get your throat cut, you can get blown away, you can get raped, anything can happen. And apparently having survived the assault on me by the officers, I was placed basically in the most dangerous situation possible. And those who know me and know the fact that there's still assaultive behavior around me by officers are surprised that I'm alive. And I'm grateful to be here on the show today. I'm grateful to be able, you know, to have survived this level of assault. But I got to tell you, something's coming down in this country.
Yeah.
And there are going to be a lot of dead people if nothing is done.
Well, we all feel it, you know, and I listen to the other guy broadcasting from the desert, and, you know, sometimes my jaw is just on the floor when I hear some of the stuff on there, and yet because I spend all day long researching and trying to get to the truth, I have to admit that this is pretty scary. You know, there are concentration camps being built all over the country by, you know, Halliburton Industries, and, you know, the cronyism and the oil and the war and all of this stuff is interconnected. And one of the things that I thought was so important to about your story is that, you know, what has happened to you is part of an old paradigm, and we're in the process. This is my own belief. We're in the process of a cosmic shift in dimensions, that the Earth is ascending. We're ascending. You know, you can see it however you want to see it, but things are changing. That much we all see. And, you know, those of us who are walking the spiritual path see that what we do to someone else, we're doing to ourselves. So the people that live in the old paradigm that are trying to control everything and create, you know, microchipped human beings and a slave society and a new world order, those people are living in a past that is no longer valid. And their paradigm is going to be falling apart. But unfortunately, these two realities, or many more realities, are interfacing. And as they do, you know, we still live in 3D. We still have bodies, and there are things like this that are going on because, you know, the wheels are in motion, and these people are going to get desperate. You know, they've manipulated, they've lied into their way into power. Every word that they say is a soundbite. And, you know, I've had to turn off the television because I can't even stomach it anymore. I really want to get a little bit more into those T valves because I think that's important for people to hear about. Mm-hmm. When did you first discover you started to do some reading? Now, this, mind you, the stuff about the T valves. Why don't you tell us what that is?
Right. Well, there are plans in place in this country to.
And be sure and speak loud because
yes,
on my
very,
side,
yes.
it's a spotty connection.
Mm-hmm.
and I don't know why, you know. So you're going to have to, like, really broadcast your voice.
Okay. There are plans in place to depopulate the United States of America.
Okay.
Depopulate means to reduce the population. And we ain't talking birth control.
Okay.
Now, these plans have been going on now for a couple of decades.
Right.
Jimmy Carter, that wonderful Christian, I sinned in my heart because I lusted after someone, that president signed off on Global 2000, which is essentially the plans, you know, the statement of the necessity to depopulate.
Wow.
Now, the particular system that I have been working on, trying to report on and investigate and explain to people, has to do with the accessing of the water system. There are several programs in place to depopulate.
Okay.
There is Mad Cow. There are the concentration camps.
Right.
You know, there is the avian flu. There are a lot of things going on now that are intended to result in a diminished level of population.
Okay.
The one particular thing that I have been working on is the water system and the use of the water system. Now, basically, after this terrible thing happened to me back in 2003 and I ended up, you know, a denizen of the streets, I became aware that having survived what Dawson and the others did to me, I figured, okay, the worst is over. I'm going to, you know, resuscitate my situation. And what happened was simply the fact that I survived simply upped the ante.
Oh, gee.
And for a little bit, things kind of seemed to cool down, and then there began to be, you know, more, I would say, unfortunate attention. I left the country back in September of 2003. I got very, very concerned. I figured I would be dead if I stayed here much longer.
Uh-huh.
And I left the country. I got a little bit of money together, and I went south to Mexico and Guatemala, and the sons of bitches followed me.
Oh, geez.
And I was in a very small village up in the hills of Guatemala, and within 24 hours of my getting there, you know, the place was basically blanketed once again by the badges. So I began to realize that whatever it was, whatever arena that I had entered, it wasn't going to be real good for me in Guatemala. I do speak Spanish, but somehow, you know, trying to persuade what was then an angry crowd of villagers who were demanding to see my gun and my knife and saying I was a murderer who had escaped from the... I think they would have been told something.
Jeez.
They thought I was a murderer. They were going to kill me.
Wow.
But yeah, that's what happened in Guatemala. I figured it might be better to be back in the States where at least I can speak the language.
Right.
Perfectly.
Right.
So I left Guatemala and I did come back to the States. There were some other mishaps south of the border, but I'm going to save those for another show.
Okay.
So I came back and a situation developed. There was a little bit of an entrapment issue and the perps backed off for a while. I think they wanted me to feel safe. They didn't want me running off to the countries again. Something had been set up and there was a little kind of legalistic trap laid, and I was able to kind of circumambulate around the trap.
Okay.
I was able to avoid the trap, and that's when they released full force against me. And since then, since back in 2004, it's been quite an experience. But during the time that they backed off, I got a little gig writing a weekly column for the Santa Monica Daily Press.
Okay.
And I had become aware about the water situation. It's kind of a long and involved story of how I became aware, and I don't think we have the time for it right now.
Okay.
But I had become aware of that, and I was then, you know, back on a paper, and I figured I would use my position, you know, on a small kind of daily paper to start reporting on this. I went over to City Hall in Santa Monica, and I went to the engineering department, and I said, hey, I'm doing a story on infrastructure work. Could I see the water records? And there was quite a bit of commotion about that. And they, you know, had to make a Public Records Act request. And there was, you know, some eyebrows raised. And about 4 hours later, I got a call from Carolyn Zachariasen, who's the editor of the Santa Monica Daily Press, and she read me the Riot Act. I was not to ask questions about water. Carolyn Zachariasen told me I was endangering her position as editor of the Santa Monica Daily Press by asking to see water records.
Wow.
Now, the water records used to be up on the web.
Right.
They were pulled off the web the week after 9/11.
Really?
Yeah. Now, let me talk a little bit about this water thing, because,
yes, go ahead.
You know, my story is shocking and dramatic, and so is the National Enquirer, you know.
Right.
And we can
right.
pick it up and go deep to that next. But because of the fact that what happened to my family, it happened to a Jewish family. Because I am maintaining that we are in the Fourth Reich, and this particular system, this water weapon, they're not going to be able to be putting rich Jewish people in concentration camps. I don't think that's going to be acceptable in this country. I don't think there's any way that they're going to have covered trucks coming down the street and taking away, you know, people with Jewish last names. I don't think that's going to be acceptable to anybody.
Right, right.
So if they were going to make a strike against any population, I'm saying that the Jewish population is on the list, but not the only one on the list.
Right.
If they were going to make a strike against the population, they would have to do it in a really sneaky, covert way so that nobody would be aware that there was a weapon that could be activated once the system had been set up, the
oh,
work
absolutely.
Had been done and completed. Now, the water lines are under the street.
Right.
And if the city's crew, you know, rolls down the street and starts working on water lines, nobody's going to think anything of it. And what they have done here in terms of the water system is to jimmy it in such a way by the use of mixing features, mixing valves, etc., down on main lines, and also putting in second lines with poison in them.
Okay.
They've got two lines down the street just about in every city in this country.
Wow.
The first line is a water line. The second line, you wouldn't want anything to do with what's in that line.
Wow.
And they have mixing components. This has not been activated yet. When this is activated, I understand it will be activated countrywide and at once. So what they have done is they have put in, they have things called T-valves. Sometimes they are using the T-valves, which are actually three-port valves. A three-port valve has three different ways that substances can come in. They can come in left to right or right to left, and obviously they don't come in both ways because they crash into each other. There's also an access, a north-south access.
Okay.
A cross valve has four ports, so there are four access lines, okay? Now, what they have done is to either put these T-valves, three-port valves, or cross valves, four-port valves, or fittings with valves on the, like, three-port fittings with valves on the end of them, which essentially makes them the same as T-valves. What they have done is they have placed them strategically between the on the access lines between the second line, which is the poison line, and the first line.
Okay.
And if this system is being set up and ready to go, with a system like this, you can individuate the toxins. So if you have a street with number like 101, number 103, number 105 on the street, you can just pick out which house you want to target with the additional poison. And that's the function of the mixing valves, to shut them on or shut them off when the system is ready to be activated.
Now, these, as I understand it, are these electronically controlled valves?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, yes, that is one of the things. Now, they have been using these particular valves and so on, you know, for decades. I mean, there's
right.
nothing particularly interesting about this. The fact is, at this point in time, the work they have been doing in the last 20 or so years is replacing these manually controlled valves with ones that have computer chips in them and respond to computer commands. So they can figure out who's living where, they can send a little message to the RFID or whatever kind of chip it is, and the chip, you know, will receive the signal and open and shut the valve, and that's what they're doing.
Wow.
Now, this is a very spooky, it sounds like a science fiction kind of fantasy is what it sounds like. But the fact is, this is what they've done.
Yeah. Well, you know, and when you mentioned poison, that could be that could be something as simple as a flu virus, couldn't it?
We don't know what it is. It appears to affect the cardiac functioning. And
okay.
It appears
do you
to
actually
like,
have some
like,
kind of sample of this?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And actually, I'm on my way up north to Washington, state of Washington, in a few days, after quite a bit of diligent broadcasting of the need for a chemist. I now have myself a chemist.
Wonderful.
And we're gonna start doing water testing. We're gonna see what this stuff is.
Yeah, because you know people are starting to get up in arms about the chemtrails that go on. I heard about those, not to change the subject, but about a year or two ago from a friend, and she had been studying this for quite a long time, and I didn't exactly poo-poo it, but when I started seeing them myself up in the air, like a spider web affair, I began to wonder what it was, and the more I dug into it, and the more research I did, the more I realized that this, too, is something that is very insidious. We may not be able to unravel the absolute truth about it, but it looks like these plans go way back in time, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does look that way.
That what we're seeing, the elections and this and that, that's all pretty much on target, wouldn't you say, as far as the real powers that be?
You know, what I think is that at this point in time, a lot of people are becoming alarmed because the move towards fascism is becoming so blatant.
Yeah.
It is now so obvious. There's no longer any real perception by many people that we actually have a two-party system. We don't. We have two stolen elections. We have a fascist regime.
Yes.
We do not have a democratic country. We do not have free elections.
Nope.
We have people who will not be relinquishing power without an enormous struggle.
Yeah,
and they seem to have cemented their power in ways that are rather shocking. Under Bill Clinton, he almost got impeached for having a dalliance in the White House.
Yeah.
The president we have now, the Downing Street memo alone was enough to impeach him.
I know.
This man appears to be unimpeachable.
I know. I just don't get it. It's almost like every day some new stuff comes out and about the connections with, various, big oil interests and Halliburton and so on and so forth. They were building those Iraqi bunkers 6 months before the war, and now they've got a $3 billion embassy that they're building in Iraq with swimming pools and all kinds of fancy things. And no wonder he's saying we're not leaving there. We're there to stay, apparently, according to their plans, because that whole area is part of the takeover of the basically becoming a one-world government.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to say something about the war in Iraq and how that relates to the water program.
Yes, would you?
I really would, yes. Now, that entire region is becoming, rapidly destabilized.
Oh, yeah.
And along concomitant with that, there has been an enormous rise in anti-Semitism, and a lot of that has been due to the way that the state of Israel has been behaving. It's been behaving abominably.
Okay.
The business with the wall and the treatment of the Palestinians and the aggressiveness. The taps of anti-Semitism have been turned on again. Now, there are now threats. I was reading, I think was it today or yesterday, on the internet, the Pakistani government was saying to Iran to just nuke Israel and say blah blah, these threats against Israel. Now, if Israel does get decimated, if there is an attack on Israel to the level of which Israel is no more,
right?
That would take away the refuge for the Jewish people. Israel was supposedly, anyway, established as a refuge for the Jewish people after the horrific events of World War II. Hitler's move. That's ostensibly why the Jewish state was established, so there would be a refuge for the Jewish people. Now, since there is so much real righteous anger at Israel at this time, and since the whole region is destabilized, and Israel is so small, if one of those bombs just slips through you know, the web, so to speak, of defense, and actually decimates Israel, then there isn't any more refuge or safety net for world Jews. At that point in time, at that point in time is when the water project will be activated. I have had quite a bit of input about this from some rather highly placed sources, and this appears to be the plan.
Wow.
Now, you know, it's kind of scary. I mean, we're living in very scary times. There is technology
absolutely.
At this
you
point.
Know, and the fact that, you know, it's, at first it seemed that there was nobody was being spied on, and now it's come out that every phone call, every record is part of the NSA databank.
Everything. Every phone is
not just
in
isolated incidents and picking out this person or that person. Everything, every phone conversation. There's nothing sacrosanct. There's nothing private anymore. You know, we're really living in a brave new world. And yeah, I even understand that the man who wrote Brave New World, Aldous Huxley, was part of the New World Order. He was part of one of those secret fraternities. You know, it was either the Illuminati or one of them. You know, what difference does a name make? You know, a rose has its thorns, and they're all pretty thorny as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems pretty insidious, you know, and the secrecy, I mean, the veil, the wall of secrecy, you know, it's really shocking. You know, I feel that we deserve to know what's going on, because we're supposed to be the ones that are, they're representing us. You know, it's all backwards. We pay them money, and now they've come up with this incredible plan to control us. And to extract all the funds, it's really like The Matrix, the movie The Matrix. You know, it's a very valid metaphor, and
it's
quite frightening.
See,
and
I think
about
these
water mains, it just seems that, you know, they could target individuals, they could target, you know, a building or a whole city block or a whole city.
Exactly.
And
or just one
about
house.
Bird flu and mad cow and so on and so forth. So, you know, they're priming the pumps, as I see it. They're getting ready. They're getting us ready for something. And, you know, just like with 9-1-1, they were performing exercises on that the very day that happened.
Well, that was the cover. That was to help cover, you know, the actual event. They also did the same thing on the London bombing, too. There were exercises that day of exactly the same scenario as what happened. So people would be, you know, possibly people in power would be confused. If calls came in about a real event, they go, it was just the exercise. So it further obfuscates and delays responsiveness to what is a real event.
Right. And see, what scares me about 9-1-1 is that it's by the time the public catches on, you know, because the hoax is so seamless. You know, this has all been planned out in advance. That by the time we begin to question it and we actually can amass some kind of evidence, which is being held back from us, even the wreckage from those buildings was carted off, and I think that it went to China,
mm-hmm.
of all places. But I mean, it was cordoned off. The wreckage was taken away, and there wasn't a thing left to investigate. Now, that's not right. And by the time we catch on, what is it, 4 years afterwards? By the time people start getting a hint of it, they're already got 10, 15, 20, 100 more projects going on,
mm-hmm.
and they can just keep throwing them at us until doomsday,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's no secret that they have, you know, detention camps built all over this country.
Right.
You know, so it's not that we need to be frightened of these things, but we do need to be aware and know that this is a reality that's occurring. It's another, I call it the other dimension, you know, and it's astonishing and it's horrifying. But, you know, when you start opening your mind to these things, you know, and doing some investigation, you realize that there's a lot more to it than you thought. And that the world is not what you think it is, and it both for the positive and the negative. You know, so why don't you tell me a little bit more about the T-valves and so on?
Well, let me explain how the electronic activation works. Actually, there's a website that people can check out that has a diagram about how this can work. It's called the ROM Communications website. It's ROM Communications.
Okay.
And there's a diagram there that's very useful in terms of understanding how electronically this can happen.
Okay.
Now, on the right side of the diagram, there is a way to make an input into the internet. There's a laptop, there's a computer, a cell phone, etc. To the left of that, in the diagram, there's the internet, and then there's like a satellite, and to the left of that, and then to the farthest left-hand corner is what can be accessed off the command, off the, you know, the computer, the cell phone, or the laptop. And over to the left-hand side, there's a little picture of an oil well, there's a little picture of a truck. I think that has to do with the GPS locating, you know, abilities through chips, et cetera. And there's also a little picture up on the left-hand corner of a water valve.
Okay.
So you can, through a command off a cell phone, goes into the web, bounces off a satellite, goes to a water valve, and they can open and shut the water valve, and you've got poison water in your house.
Wow.
And that's the way it works.
People having heart attacks left and right, or coming down with this mysterious bird flu that we've been told mm-hmm. is going to hit, and that businesses need to prepare for massive evacuations of the jobs.
Now, one of the things that's of interest is recently, I think it was a couple of months ago, in Oroville, California, the Department of Emergency Services ran a drill. You know, and they do drills about things they're going to do.
Uh-huh.
And this drill, it was called Operation Silver Lining, and it had to do with a scenario where there was a terrorist attack and somebody poisoned the water system.
Oh, my.
And so everybody had to run around buying water, bottled water, and they had, you know, little scenarios of people taking you to the hospital with water poisoning and just running a drill about what they're going to do if and when this happens. So, apparently, from what I can tell, filters don't work real well on this stuff, whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of people have emailed me and asked me how to protect themselves if they just, you know, buy bottled water.
Uh-huh.
And the problem here is that the skin is also a sense organ.
Oh,
and depending
yeah.
on the toxins
that
are used, they can go in through your skin and also mess you up really badly.
In other words, you could be taking a shower, for instance, or a bath, or even washing your face, and you could be introducing something into your system through the pores of the skin.
Absolutely. And actually, the fact is that the toxin they're using is accessible that way.
Okay.
So, you know, people won't be able to bathe. They won't be able to wash their pets. They won't be able to do dishes. I mean, see, surviving something like this is pretty near impossible.
Uh-huh.
And what I think is probably the best way to derail this effort is to let people know about them. Now, for those listening to this broadcast, there's an article that I wrote about this called Public Extermination Project. And simply by Googling the title of the article, you can read the article. There are a couple of minor mistakes I made in the article. One of them has to do with the incipience of this project. I believed at that time that it began after 9/11. It did not.
It was actually began before that, didn't it?
Long before that. Decades before that.
Wow.
Very quietly, they have been working on this through at least 20 years.
Wow.
So we have, you know, problems at the highest levels of power going back quite a ways in this country.
Right. And in our conversations, we speculated that, you know, most likely the people who are actually installing these valves haven't got a clue of what they're putting in.
Oh, they don't.
No, they're just taking orders from their bosses, and their bosses are, you know, and maybe even their bosses don't know. You know,
well,
they may be given disinformation about what these are for, that they're to, you know, who knows?
Street workers, the guys who are, you know, digging up the streets and replacing the valves, they're actually where I got most of the information. I now have photographs of blueprints of this water system. I certainly didn't get them from the engineers of the Department of Water and Power in Los Angeles or Santa Monica, and I certainly went to both departments. And as far as they're concerned, they didn't know what a mixing valve was, and they didn't have any blueprints. Well, the guys in the truck, you know, the foreman in the truck working on the street had the blueprints, and I got a good look at them, and I got a number of photographs. Those are not attached to the article because I got the photographs afterwards, but they are completely supportive of, you know, of my contentions as to how the system would have to be set up. The street workers,
I also want to let people know, too, that, you know, before our hour is up, that we had a little difficulty getting the bio page and all that up in time for the show, but I'm going to be posting, you know, the information that you presented to us, you know, in your bio with some links that people can check, you know, can link up to check out for themselves. And, you know, it just behooves us all to be aware of what's going on because, you know, once something is brought out into the light, it's a lot more difficult to continue doing it. You know, it's like the magician. Once you know the trick, you know, who's going to pay to go watch something that you already know how it's done? You know, they've got to come up with a new trick. So I believe that, you know, when enough people are aware of something that they can't do it, you know, and I believe that there's a lot of stuff that could have come down, you know, after 911, and that a lot of it is impossible because now we're ready. It's like it's 4 years later, and now we're beginning to see the pattern, and they may think that we're stupid and dumb. But the fact of the matter is that we have heart, and when we wake up to something, we will not tolerate it. And, you know, this country has risen out of the ashes so many times, and we can do it again. And, you know, it's about having faith in a higher power and trusting that there are no accidents, you know, that the powers that be that are the real powers, you know, the one, knows what he's doing, and that everything is working, you know, as it should. So
I think
your bio there with some links so that people can do some further investigation. But there's so many things going on right now of that nature that, you know, you could spend 24 hours a day on it, you know, and I try not to dwell on that stuff too much, but you just kind of fell into my lap, you know, and I thought, well, let's see, I could do this for the broadcast. And I thought, you know, this is really an interesting story. You're a really wonderful person. And clearly, some very nasty things have happened to you. And by shedding light onto your life, I'm hoping that this will make you a little more public.
Thank you.
You know,
I believe very strongly that it is possible to derail the plans.
I do not
believe it is possible to derail the plans by violence.
Yeah.
I think it is only possible through truth and through steadfast, diligent effort to shed light on what this world has really become. And the only way we are going to change the nature of what the world has become is by shedding light. It is not by doing violence. It is not by engaging in warfare. It is by abandoning warfare and pursuing the truth.
Exactly. 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 You don't get peace, you know, by through war. It's never happened, and it never will happen. You know, it's just impossible.
Recently, I saw the movie Munich by Steven Spielberg. Basically, it was...
Yeah, I just saw that myself.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, the violence of what happened at the Munich Olympics, you know, translating on and retaliatory violence and then retaliation against the retaliators. All you have there is a very strong message that violence breeds violence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the mentality that says, well, let's nuke them, you know, that is not, you know, that's not where we're going, folks. You know, what we do to someone else, we are doing to ourselves. And that's the real problem, is that we cannot continue. It's like we're trying to commit suicide. And, you know, this division and duality is starting, it's part of an old paradigm. And those of us who are starting to awaken and live in a new one, we can only live with integrity and with truth and out of love, because love is the only thing that really conquers all things, and it transcends all things. And it's a miracle that you're still alive. And I definitely want to be able to have you back in the future, so that I can let the people know out there that you're all right. And, you know, maybe you'll be able to find out some more things once you go up to Washington and talk to the chemist.
I've really got my fingers crossed about that. I have a very good feeling about this. You're very very brave guy.
Your chemist?
Yes.
Well, you know, anybody that listens to you and that assists you is really, you know, is going to, it takes bravery. You know, it really does. And the unsung heroes of our age are going to be those people who are willing to keep their integrity and speak their truth. And, you know, I believe we've actually already won the battle, but we still have to do the legwork and, you know, put one foot in front of the other and keep to the highest vibration possible, because that's the only way that we can get through this.
I want to thank you so much. You know, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you over the last week or so, and I really hope that I really wish you the best with your broadcast.
Thank you very much, and the same with you. I mean, you've become a very special person to me, and I just want the audience to know that we will be keeping in touch, and that if anything happens to Janet and she disappears, that I will be letting this audience know that. And that you will be coming back in the future to talk about, you know, what you've discovered, and, you know, and to let people know that where you're at with your journey, because it's really a spiritual journey, and that's the most exciting thing about it. These are really exciting times, and, you know, I think it's really important to stress that this is all good, you know, that these things are coming out. This is a purging of negative energies, so. You know, this is something that has to happen, and it happens in an individual basis in our lives and on a global basis. So when we see things out there that are disturbing or upsetting or bothering you, know that it's part of the process of shedding something that's old, and we're headed towards something really wonderful. So I want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. And I think that we've reached the end of our broadcast for tonight. So I will sign out, and I hope that you folks at home enjoyed this. I know it was a little difficult to hear Janet, but I'll post some information on the website, and you know, be sure and check it out, and you know, find out more information for yourselves.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.